Hi, Carm Capriotto here. You know, every new and young technician today has a lot more shops to choose from. And let's face it, there's a lingering issue of the technician shortage. Now, if you're a business owner, what do you need to do to attract these individuals and prevent them from going to the next shop?
But hiring sons, with the thought process being that if you treat your employees like sons, like they're your kids, and your job is to help them grow in all different ways. And they might be, they grow and they leave you. That's okay, because your job was to help them grow while they were there. And that kind of culture will lead to people that want to be a son.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey there, Carm here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast guy. Now, you know, becoming a perpetual student is one of your smartest tactics in keeping ahead of your competition. Listen today as Dan Gilley, president of RLO, will answer the question, why should I work for you? Ask yourself this. Are you attracting or repelling your employees? Hey friends, Remarkable Results Radio is proud to partner with Napa Auto Care in the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. Join Napa in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, and discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry. This is an event you absolutely don't want to miss, and I do hope to meet you at the 2020 Napa Expo. Contact your Napa store to learn more and get yourself signed up. Find the show notes for this episode with Dan Gilley at remarkableresults.biz/E451. Now, if you've not subscribed to a favorite podcast listening app, then go to your app store, search, and download. And you know why? Because mobile is it. Hey, if you're a business owner, how would you attract an employee? What are the things you would do to improve your shop and make it as attractive and organized as it can be? Today, Dan Gilley will bring light to the decisions addressing the best interests of the would-be future candidate or employee of a shop. Dan Gilley is president and CEO of RLO Training, and he coaches shops to run efficiently and profitably. In this episode, you'll understand the utmost priorities needed by shop owners to address the how to attract the right kind of employees and the what are the necessary tactics in order to keep them. As Dan would say, it's either you attract them or you repel them. Are they there just for the paycheck or for the team? Hey, a warm welcome to Dan Gilley, president, RLO. Hey, Dan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm terrific today. Thank you so much. You know, you and I have been trying to get together for a while. I'm glad we finally hooked up. I want to talk about why I should work for you, you know, from the concept of the service professional.
I've been in the industry for a long time, and I actually was thinking the other day that the difference from when I was a technician 30 plus years ago and now is that technicians have there's never been a problem getting a job. The difference is 30 years ago, I could have quit working at one shop and had another job that afternoon, and I had two or three shops to choose from. Now, if I want to quit working, I'm a technician, I have 20 shops to choose from. That's really the only difference. But I mean, you ask technicians, why do toolboxes have wheels? It's so I can roll this thing out of here and go to work someplace else if you don't treat me right. And unfortunately, our industry has not done a good job of treating technicians right.
So if I have 20 to pick from, I could be pretty damn choosy.
Yes, you can. My opinion is that this is the biggest threat facing our industry, is attracting quality people going forward. Because you can have the most beautiful shop in town, but if you've got no technicians to work on vehicles, what are you going to do?
But attractive shop isn't what it's about. I mean, yeah, you can be a beautiful shop with a terrible culture, and you're not going to bring in the right people.
Right. But I mean, again, we have to, it's not just, I mean, we are really facing a talent shortage. The average age of the technician continues to creep up, and they approach retirement age, and we're not attracting young people like we need. It's just not we haven't done a very good job of marketing ourselves or marketing the opportunity. So we're not attracting people. And then, of course, the other problem we have is, and this was a statistic I got from the vocational schools, they're graduating a lot of talent every year. But if you ask them how many of those people will be in this industry 3 years after they graduate, it's less than 30%.
Yeah, I know. And I'm on a board of our post-secondary school. Those stats aren't that far off that we find out. Many of the dealerships are taking them, and the young technicians, men and ladies, aren't there after a couple of years, and they're being consumed by, they're still working in their career, in their chosen career, but they're not working for the independents. And that's what I'm very concerned about. And thanks for bringing that up. We've done a lot of shows on that. But here I am. I'm a technician, and I'm leaving, and half toolbox will travel, and I'm walking into a shop. You know, why should I work for you? This is, I think, a great lesson to bring to the industry as to what a shop owner needs to prepare to build his bench and to bring on new talent.
I think there's some great opportunities out there. I do believe that there's a lot of talent leaving dealerships because it's a toxic culture. And I don't want to paint all dealerships with that broad brush, but there's a lot of dealerships that do not appreciate their technicians, and being appreciated is a big part of any job. The big thing that I would say for independence is the first thing you need to do is look in the mirror. Because you're either attracting people or repelling people based on how you run your shop. And by that, I mean shops can be a place that I look forward to going to work every day because I work with teammates, or it can be a grind because I have to go and face this thing because I need a paycheck. And that only goes on for so long, and then I'm going to go someplace else.
Doesn't every working technician know of the reputation of every shop in the market?
I think that they're pretty aware of what's going on out there. I think that probably the dealership technicians might not realize how good things can be if they came up in the dealership world and that's all they've ever known. And of course, the other part of that is there's some fear because I've only been working on Toyotas, and now I'm going to have to work on other things. So there's a little bit of that fear out there, but I think that they don't realize how good some shops are. I mean, what struck me years ago, we have our bottom-line impact groups where we go and we do analysis of shops. And years ago, when I had my shop, I was a member. And we went to a shop here in Washington, and I was on the team that was interviewing the employees, and I was talking with this one technician, and I said, "What do you like best about working here?" The owner's name was Rado, and I, if Rado hears this, he's a wonderful guy. But he said, he looked me in the eye and he said, "Rado says thank you every day and means it." And I about fell over because I'm thinking, well, it's not this beautiful shop or it's not the big paycheck. No, he was told thank you every day by somebody who meant it. It was a big eye opener for me because I thought, well, gosh, what do you need to say thank you for? Because you give him a paycheck every week. But it's a whole lot more than that, being appreciated and people acknowledging the effort that you put out. And that's, again, why shop owners need to look in the mirror to make sure that they are doing everything possible to let people know that they're appreciated.
Is it Rito Philly?
Yes.
Yeah, I've interviewed Rito. It was episode 365, and he became an E-Myth coach. I met him at ATE a few years ago. Nice guy.
He's a great guy. And he could teach a lot of people a lot of things about how to treat your employees.
Well, when you say thank you, you really mean it. And that goes back to the fact of the working techs, even in all the independent shops that know each other in the marketplace, they through osmosis, they know what kind of place, how it works, how it runs, if they're appreciated or not. So here's my point. If I'm going to take my tools and get up and go, do I already know as a technician where I'm going to go or where I'd like to work? And do I already have a job, or do I just say, I'm out of here, I'm going to become a free agent, and I'm going to go out and start interviewing?
I think that varies with the technician. I think many of them, it's a spur of the moment. I've had enough. I've reached my breaking point. I'm going, and I'll figure it out as I go. And then there's quite a few that are more looking at, well, what's out there. And it's a smoother transition where I'm going to give my notice on Friday and I'll be here in 2 weeks kind of thing. I think I've seen in the good areas, it's like the technician has about 7 or 8 shops to choose from. And in the, and I say bad areas, I'm talking about bad for the shops as far as finding technicians, they'll have over 25 shops to choose from. And we're talking a very small, this is an urban area. So it's a very small geographical area. I got to drive an hour. It's like, oh, it's a 2 or 3 minute longer drive or a 2 or 3 minute shorter drive from my house to this new shop because there's so many of them.
I'm not understanding the good areas and the bad areas. Can you refine that?
The good areas would be if I'm a shop owner, there's only 6 or 7 other shops looking for a technician at the same time I am, versus the bad area, there's 25 of my competitors that are looking for a technician at the same time.
But a bad area for shops that are looking is good for a technician who's looking,
yes.
Really. Okay.
And again, there's no, for as a technician, there's really no bad area. There's do I have 6 shops to choose from or do I have 16 shops?
So convince me, Mr. Shop Owner, why should I work for you?
First of all, we're a team. We work as a team here. Now, again, different technicians are going to have different priorities. As a technician coming from a dealership, that was a big deal to me because at the dealership with 12 technicians, it was every man for himself. And it was pretty cutthroat. And so working on a team or working as a team was a welcome concept for me or something that I wanted to be a part of. The shop, it goes without saying that if I'm going to spend 8 hours a day there, the shop needs to be spotless. It needs to be up to date. It needs to have an area where an employee lounge where I can sit down, have a cup of coffee or whatever. And the big one that I would emphasize if I was looking for a technician is paid training, because as a professional, I want to continue to grow as a technician. And there's a lot of shops that do not pay for training, which is to me is very sad. So I would make sure that I was letting everybody know that not only do I pay for your training, I pay you to attend training. I would say, talk to my guys, see if you're a good fit. Those are the people you're going to be with all day long. And if they hit it off, then it's a good fit and we can work together. If they don't hit it off, and maybe this is because I never was really technician desperate, but I would much rather hire somebody with a good attitude without necessarily all the skills than somebody that's got great skills and a prima donna attitude.
Right. We always seem to fire for attitude and hire for aptitude. And I get that. You're so right. Where do benefits come in? I mean, do you have to be a benefit rich offer?
I think that benefits are important and it's more to be competitive than, I mean, again, I don't think that technicians are looking for the last dime. They're looking for a place that's going to meet their financial needs and take care of their family. And so if you're competitive, however, let me just take a sidetrack here. Why can dealerships or some shops offer benefits and others say, I can't afford it? Let's maybe we should reexamine the paradigm here. If I came to your town and I'm not that familiar with upstate New York, but if I came to your town and I asked around and I said, where is a good place to get a job in this town? So years ago, if you'd have come to Seattle, everybody would have said, get a job at Boeing. Now it might be Microsoft. But or Amazon, because they pay well and they got good benefits and all that stuff. Well, it's the same thing in the automotive world. Where is the good shop to work here in town? And part of that's pay, part of it's benefits, part of it's culture. So it's a total package. And again, when shops say, well, I can't afford healthcare, I say, well, who's supposed to pay for it? You or the customer? Because I might suggest that if you can't afford to pay for benefits for your people, that maybe you need to reexamine your pricing structure because you have competitors that are offering benefits to their employees. You know, it's not like the old days where we paid for the whole family, but certainly paying for a portion of their of their medical expenses would be a big part of.
There's something there.
Yeah.
When you sit down with your clients and you get into this kind of conversation with them, Dan, and it comes to, I'm not competitive, I've got a great company, but I'm lacking a few things. And you know their P&L because they're a client. You know all about them and you know what you're working on with them. When it gets to, I need to make more money, what a great opportunity for a business coach to, work that, individual owner into either labor rate issues or, expense issues. Do you see a lot of that going on?
Well, we see folks that are being challenged with not hitting the gross profit targets that they might want to. And I might suggest that usually gross profit is a mindset. If anybody ever heard Bob O'Connor, the founder of our company, Train, he used to say that gross profit is a 10-cent pencil and a mind change. And he already gave you the pencil. So you're responsible for the mind change. And now it's a keystroke and a mind change.
You just popped into my mind that whole, and I've been hearing this a lot lately in the last 6 to 9 months, Dan, is that whole fear factor.
That's probably the one of the things that we deal with quite a lot, because we don't want to run any customers off, and we certainly don't want to charge more than the guy down the street. And I wonder if we're our own worst enemy many times, because we're afraid to charge what we're really worth. It. So again, if we go back 30 years, all the trades paid about the same. If you were a welder, a plumber, electrician, automotive technician, they were all about the same as far as income. Just a matter. Then it was more of a matter of what do you want to do? You want to pull wire, or you want to work on cars? Well, now the other trades have passed us.
Is it because that they became better businessmen? I mean, why do you think that happened?
I think that they kept adjusting their rates with inflation, and we got lost somewhere. It just passed us by.
There's one thing that I believe that exists in our business and may not exist in all those other trades that you mentioned, Dan, and that is the race to the bottom, it seems.
That's true. The other thing is that we have a little different or a disadvantage in that our service advisors know what everything costs when they're ringing up a customer, whereas if you went to the grocery store, the clerk at the grocery store just runs it across the scanner. They don't have any idea whether they made $3 on those apples or 30 cents. And so there's no emotional bank account there, whereas shop owners and service advisors sometimes get emotionally involved, or they look at the customer through their own wallet. And so therefore, we don't charge quite what we probably should.
And the worst thing to do is to have the owner on the counter, because he'll never make any money for the company.
Well, as the owner, it's their right to not make any money if they choose not to.
Doesn't help the business.
It doesn't help the business.
Doesn't help hiring great talent. I mean, there's a lot of things that it prevents from happening. Wow. Hey, it's Carm here with news about the new Napa Smart Sign, previously known as the digital menu board. I like to think of it like a silent salesman on a TV near your service desk. It's an easy way for you to increase customer awareness of your current promotions and educate them about needed repairs and service. In other words, having a Napa Smart Sign will supercharge your sales. Napa Auto Care tests have shown 1 out of 5 consumers ask for a repair or service they've seen on the board, and targeted promotions resulted in double-digit increases. One Auto Care shop owner said, "I've received amazing feedback. Customers are actually asking for additional services they see on the screen." Now that's what I call getting results. You choose the content for your Napa Smart Sign from a library of auto care services and repair topics. The Smart Sign comes with preloaded content. Just about anything you can think of is available, from alternators and alignment to wiper blades and wheel bearings. There are over 150 topics to choose from. Templates can be customized with your location branding for a professional look. Some of the options include customer reviews from Kukui, DemandForce, or MechanicNet, live news, and even the weather. Whatever content you choose, it's preloaded for you. Just as important, it's easy to change your services, prices, and video content anytime you'd like. Plus, the latest Napa national promotions are downloaded to you automatically. Of course, having a Napa Smart Sign gives your auto care center a professional, state-of-the-art look and feel that tells customers, "I'm on top of my game." Now, that builds trust, which means recommendations are accepted more readily and customers spend more. Find out more about what Napa Smart Sign can do for your business. Talk with your servicing Napa store owner to find out more about the smart sign and all the other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent repair shops in the country. Is it difficult? Let's go back. To my question: is it difficult to get certain owners to make that leap of faith?
With the group process, we call it positive peer pressure. You're in a group of 15 or so other shop owners, and they're all saying, "Look, we've been where you were at, and we did it, and it worked. So you need to just step out and do it as well." And that makes it a lot easier, as opposed to me just saying, "I think you need to raise your prices." It's more the group process, the other people that are in their shoes right now makes all the difference. And so while we can kind of point them in the right direction, the members will really help them with the faith to step forward.
Nothing like a little peer pressure, but also the fact that they've been there and done that, and it's sometimes not hard to emulate someone who can actually show you the pathway. When you see that happening, do you celebrate that as a big pivot in a customer's business?
We try to celebrate every milestone that in the groups that people hit. I spend more time doing the actual training in front of a classroom. And so the satisfaction I get is when I see the light bulb come on and they go, they get it. My facilitators working with members in the groups get to celebrate when they come back and their numbers have dramatically improved and they get the round of applause and the attaboys and keep on moving forward. And that's kind of the process, is to keep moving forward.
Boy, I've interviewed a ton of people from bottom line impact groups, and they so credit their success with that. So, high fives and congratulations to you. Do you find, when you talk to your facilitators, that understanding the role of the CEO of the company is one of the big things they work on?
Yes, it's a tough transition. I can remember, as a technician, I didn't know that I could find another technician that was as good as me to work on my customers' cars. And of course, the reality was there's hundreds of them out there just as good as me, or thousands of them.
You have to accept the fact.
Yeah. In fact, there was. I happened to hire a couple who were better than me.
That's what you should do, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Right. And then the same thing with a service advisor, well, gosh, I got to be on the front counter because these are my customers. And it was really interesting. I hired a service advisor and my sales went up almost $20,000 a month because he actually did what I told him to do when it came to charging, as opposed to what I was doing. And I thought, must have been a fluky month. And then I looked at the same number of repair orders.
You only gave up $250,000 a year in sales. Hello.
<Oops. laughs> That's kind of scary, isn't it?
No, that's a great story. And in fact, it's a perfect lesson for anyone listening. I've heard this before. I can't afford to hire a service writer and take myself off the counter. It may not always be $20,000, but the fact of the matter is you're on your way to help paying for that individual and making all kinds of money.
The biggest thing with the service advisor is it frees the shop owner up to do other things that are also very important. I usually ask shop owners, I said, who's the best marketer for your company? And they think about it for a minute and they realize that they are. And then I will always like to challenge them. So when you opened your business several years back, how many business cards did you give out in the first 90 days? Well, probably about 500. Everybody they met got a business card. So how many business cards have you given out in the last 90 days? Three. So if you get excited about your business like you did when you started, what would happen? Business would improve overnight because you'd be out there. Hi, I'm Dan. I own the shop down the street. Come see me.
Work in the crowd, work in the community, work in the network.
Joining the different organizations that meet at lunch that you can't go to when you don't have a service advisor that will grow your business. I mean, there's just lots of things that, and then of course, I also like to challenge sometimes owners and say, did you open your business so you could be the world's greatest service advisor, or did you open your business because you had other things you wanted to do?
Any skills that you could recommend that shop owners today need to have to really run a great business?
Well, I think that there's quite a few different skills that they need. They need to understand their numbers, their financials. I think that they need to operate with a plan. Here's where we are now. Here's where we're going. And that vision needs to be shared with the team. They need to care about their people. I'm going to speak for myself as a former technician who was very excited about cars and not necessarily excited about people. It's a growth process to grow. And I wanted to write a class called Hiring Sons. Now I'm a father who has four daughters, but Hiring Sons, with the thought process being that if you treat your employees like sons, like they're your kids, and your job is to help them grow in all different ways. And they might be, they grow and they leave you. That's okay, because your job was to help them grow while they were there. And that kind of culture will lead to more people that want to be a son.
I love the title. I can so understand what you're talking about. You're here to nurture your child. You're there to give them some freedom to fail and to learn new things. You can't always be there. Okay, you can't be a helicopter parent, you know, with a son and expect to grow a great employee with a son persona, if you will, or son stereotype. Love the concept. I mean, when are you going to write it? I think it would be a well-attended class.
It's on the list. It's
so August, right? <It's>,
maybe for ATE next year.
Yeah, you know, Dan, what does it take to write a class and, you know, to really bring the meat to the table? I mean, I didn't plan on asking you that, but you bring up such a great thought.
It depends on how passionate you are about the subject. It doesn't seem like work when you're passionate about it. I wrote the class, Why Should I Work for You? Actually, I was angry. And my wife, when she saw the first draft, said, you probably shouldn't write a class when you're upset. As a former technician, I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for technicians. And we haven't, as shop owners, we haven't done all the things that we need to do to take care of these very hardworking, very talented people. So I get a little frustrated sometimes. And the other thing that, go back to these people that are coming out of the VOTEC, I hear all these numbers that, well, I'm going to hire this guy at this dollar amount because they don't know anything. Well, of course they don't know anything because they haven't worked in a shop for a while. And the thing that struck me, I went to Ireland on vacation, and I think I mentioned this to you before, and I went to the Waterford Crystal plant where they hire apprentices for a 3-year apprenticeship program. And apprentices make the same amount as the journeyman people. They start at that amount and they make that throughout their apprenticeship because they, I said, well, gosh, that seems very generous. And they said, well, they have to eat. Right? They have the same expenses that the other people do. They have to have a house. They have to have food. I mean, do we want our technicians in training to live at home? So we need to pay them. We need to pay them a livable wage. Why are we losing people? Well, you're paying them $15 an hour and I can be a bus driver and make $23 an hour. Let's see, I can eat on $23 an hour, on $15 an hour. I can't hardly pay my rent. And oh, by the way, you want me to spend $10,000 on tools this year?
Boy, I was driving by an Arby's the other day. There was a sign out front for part-time wage for $12.50. And so if you look at a full-time job for $15, the math doesn't work. And I so appreciate what someone the other day, I was chatting with some college kids since I'm involved in post-secondary advisory. And I was saying, hey, did you get a job? Yeah, Toyota offered me a job. And I said, great. You know, are you happy with the starting wage? Well, really, no, because I I'm living like 30 miles away and I really want to work there. But by the time I added up my rent and my fuel and they started to talk about it, I had no discretionary income. And so I was just going to be one bored guy working 8 hours a day doing nothing for how long? They really didn't tell me, you know, if there was a pathway to, you know, a different job, but, you know, more money. And I think you have nailed it. We have that mentality of how cheaply can I get this person? Instead of saying, I'm so excited, I want to pay somebody a decent living so that they don't look behind themselves. They constantly look forward. And, you know, when you look at the benefits package, you could say, listen, I'm going to pay $20 an hour. My benefit package is worth $9. You know, it depends on how you figure it all out. People will stick around a long time for a great benefits package and a good team and the right culture, and for an owner that when they say thank you, they really mean it. I love that line. I love that thing from Rito.
The interesting thing, I realized, I was just kind of curious. So many years ago, I finished, while I was attending a vocational, a two-year community college taking the automotive program. And towards the end of the first year of a two-year program, I got a job at the local Toyota dealership. And I mean, I knew less than nothing. And fortunately for me, there was a technician there who treated me like a little brother, because he was about 3 years older than me. And he gave me some tips and he gave me a hand. And the service manager was patient when I made mistakes, because I made a lot of them. And so I Googled how much was that in that year worth today. And it was $18 an hour. That'd be the equivalent of $18 an hour right now for somebody who literally knew nothing. I mean, I had worked I had fiddled around with my own car in high school, but I'd gone through, I was 6 months into a 2 year program. Now I ended up working there full time through the summer and then through the next year and then full time through another summer. And I learned a lot, and I did make them some money over time, but I made them no money probably for the first 6 months. And I think we need to adjust our attitude. It's not like you should, how cheap can I buy it, buy this person or rent this person for? It's what kind of investment did I find the right person with the attitude and the character that I'm looking for? And then what kind of investment am I willing to make in this person? Because, 4 years from now, this guy is going to be worth this, or gal is going to be worth their weight in gold. So can I spend some money now? I mean, if I told you that I had a stock that you had to buy now, and it's going to cost you a lot of money now, but in 5 years, it would pay huge dividends, and I could guarantee you that, you'd buy it.
I love the analogy, and I can blow all kinds of holes in it, because you can tell me to buy a stock, and you could promise me that in 5 years it's going to be worth something. But I have no choice. I can't help. I don't own the company. There's nothing I can do to make that stock worth anymore. But if I bring on an individual at $18 an hour, it is my responsibility. Can I make that person a $30 an hour person? Yes, I can. It's on me.
And yes, and the other big thing there with the analogy is that, is there any guarantee? Well, there's no guarantee, but I can certainly improve my chances of success by doing a thorough interview process to make sure that I'm looking for attitude and I'm hiring character. I mean, if their parents haven't put character in them in the first 18 years, there's not much you're going to do in the next 18. I need the character and I need the attitude. And then I make that investment, and somebody will say, well, gosh, I did that. I worked with this guy for 3 years and they left. Okay, great. We'll go find another one. Because if they stayed with you for 3 years, there's a very good chance they made you some money. Yes, they didn't the first year, but the second year they probably broke even, and the third year they made some money for you. And you're looking, yes, nobody's going to stay with you forever, chances are. I mean, I have some guys that stayed with me 10, 11 years, and that's great. But there's no guarantees. So let's keep investing in people. Make sure we're working very hard to find good people, make the investment, and it'll pay off. And it goes back to hiring sons.
I love it. I just so love it. You know, I'm always so into the interviews that I do, and I always take notes during every interview. And I wrote down the words, see the potential in someone. And basically, you just described that. I mean, when we're going to hire someone, and like you say, they've got the character and they've got the right attitude. And while you're making this decision to hire this individual, you need to go out and say, wow, you know, I see this piece of clay in front of me, and what can I make out of it? Do I see the potential in that individual? And will they add value to my business? And how can I make that work? Some great, great stuff here, Dan. Wow, I'm so happy we hooked up. Would you come back?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. you can talk to me about something maybe I'm passionate about in the future.
Oh, wow. It'll be an even better show than that. Well, thanks so much to Dan Gilley, President, RLO Training. About time I had you on, man.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.